Hello and welcome to the MDS podcast, the official podcast of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society. I'm your host, Sarah Schaefer from the Yale School of Medicine and the deputy editor of this podcast. And today I have the pleasure of speaking to Jennifer Eisenhower, who is a registered psychologist at Perrin Institute for Neurological and Translational Sciences, University of Western Australia Medical School in Perth, Australia. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really honored to be chatting with you today.
Today, we're going to be talking about your paper in Movement Disorders Clinical Practice that is about habit reversal therapy combined with acceptance and commitment therapy for the treatment of tics in Tourette syndrome. So let's start with just some definitions, because there are a lot of different types of therapy. And, you know, in medical school, a lot of us learn about cognitive behavioral therapy and other things like that. But habit reversal therapy is a little bit of a different animal. Can you talk about what that is and how it differs from other types of therapy, and specifically other types of therapy for tics, like comprehensive behavioral intervention for tics? Is there a difference there?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start by explaining what cognitive behavioral therapy is, for starters. So that's essentially your gold standard psychological intervention. It has evidence across all different psychological conditions. And it's really based on that framework that our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors are all interconnected. So each is affecting each other at any one time. There's a real focus on modifying and challenging negative thoughts and behaviors to improve how we're feeling and to promote more positive feelings. And you can think of habit reversal therapy as an adaptation of cognitive behavioral therapy, in that it uses that same framework that our thoughts and feelings affect behaviors. In the case of habit reversal therapy, you're trying to challenge or change the behaviors which are habits. So it's targeted at treating habit disorders such as tics, nail biting, skin picking, hair pulling, etc. There's three main components for habit reversal therapy. So that's psychoeducation, awareness training, and competing response training. So with step one, psychoeducation, you're really trying to give the patient as much information as possible on the neurobiological model of tics. In particular, that how that urge tic relief cycle is always happening outside of their awareness. You then move on to awareness training, and this is when you're really trying to get the patient to become very aware of how often their tics are actually occurring and what's triggering them. And also helping them to identify what their premonitory urges look and feel like to them. And those can be different for each of their tics. So what does it feel like before the tic happens? What are those thoughts that you get before the tic happens? Unpacking all of that with the patient. Then moving on to the main component of habit reversal therapy, which is competing response training. And that's essentially training the patient in performing a competing response, which is a physically incompatible action to their tic, which will prevent the tic from occurring. So you can think of that as the opposite action to what's involved in doing the tic. So for example, if there's a shoulder shrugging tic, competing response would be to tense the shoulders in that downwards position and hold that for 30 seconds up to a minute, or at least until that urge to tic has subsided. So those are the main components of habit reversal therapy. You also would focus a lot on relaxation training, as well as exploring the different triggers, so environmental triggers, internal triggers that may be influencing the frequency and severity of their tics as well. So that's essentially habit reversal therapy. The way it differs from comprehensive behavioral intervention for tics, the two are used quite interchangeably, really. So CBIT, or comprehensive behavioral intervention for tics, is essentially an extension of habit reversal therapy. And that's when there's just a lot more monitoring involved. There's a lot more kind of social support involved. It's very much targeted at children as well.
Absolutely. And you introduced in your paper something that's at least new to me, which is the acceptance and commitment therapy that you pair with habit reversal therapy. What is acceptance and commitment therapy, and in what context has it classically been used? And why do you think it pairs well with HRT?
Yeah. So acceptance and commitment therapy, or what we call ACT, as an acronym. That's part of the third wave of cognitive behavioral therapies. And those are the therapies that incorporate mindfulness processes. So it's a much more modern version of cognitive behavioral therapy, and it's also gaining a lot of evidence to support its use in psychological conditions as well. The difference is that it focuses on accepting our thoughts and feelings rather than changing them or controlling them, which is more what CBT focuses on. And the byproduct of doing that is actually that you get symptom improvement. And that's because you're giving less power to those thoughts and feelings. You're struggling less with them, and then you start to feel better in that way. So essentially, APT focuses on being present in the moment, or what we know as mindfulness. It focuses on creating space between ourselves and our thoughts. So that whole act of noticing our thoughts as they are, not trying to change them, just seeing them come and go throughout our awareness. And similarly, accepting our feelings as they are without struggling with them or trying to change them. And another big part of ACT is also identifying our values and what's important to us, and doing our best to act in line with these values as well to improve quality of life. So that's acceptance and commitment therapy. I think it pairs really nicely with habit reversal therapy because it's targeting those unpleasant urges associated with tics. So it's providing patients with some techniques to use while they're experiencing those urges, which create a lot of discomfort. Habit reversal therapy I like to think of as a really good circuit breaker, which is why we did it first in our trial. And that's really disrupting that cycle of that urge tic release, that vicious cycle that keeps on occurring. And then acceptance and commitment therapy, that's giving the patient techniques that help build their tolerance of those urges. And there's actually some new research that indicates that a higher urge tolerance actually is associated with lower tic severity or less symptoms as well. So there's definitely a place for acceptance-based strategies in the treatment of tics.
So you started to mention the protocol of your study. What led your team to want to do it at all? What gap were you trying to fill?
Yeah, Dr. Rick Stell, who's a consultant neurologist and movement disorder specialist at the Perrin Institute Clinic, he approached me quite a few years ago now, just wondering if I'd be willing to train in habit reversal therapy so that he could start referring patients to me. He obviously had a lot of patients that were experiencing quite heavy side effects with the medications and saw this as another treatment option. At the time, I was still doing my training, so I just became heavily interested in the topic. And while treating the patients, I started adding in some acceptance and commitment therapy techniques as well. Dr. Rick Stell was very keen on doing a project in that area. And given that we knew there was already a large support for habit reversal therapy out there, and we were noticing there was some benefit with the ACT techniques as well, we thought, why not combine the two therapies into a protocol and start a trial?
That's awesome. Very organically.
Yeah. We just happen to be in a really good workplace to make that happen as well. We're a neurological clinic, but we're also a research institute.
And how did you actually conduct the study and what did you find? And I just want to clarify, your population was adults only with tics and Tourette syndrome, correct?
Yeah, we're adults only. That's correct. Yeah. So our patients were age 16 and older, and we did allow comorbidities as part of the study. However, the main thing was that the tics had to be the main problem to the patient. Dr. Rick Stell, he was the study neurologist on the trial, and he conducted all the screening of patients. Myself and Dr. Alison Buckland, we conducted the patient assessments, and that involved our primary outcome measure, which was the Yale Global Tic Severity Scale, which is a clinician-rated assessment, as well as the modified Rush video rating scale, which is a video assessment, so a more objective measure of tics. Those video recordings were then rated by a neurologist, so scored by a neurologist. The intervention was conducted over 8 weeks, so 8 one-hour sessions held with the therapist, and that was myself. And then we repeated those assessments immediately following the treatment and at 6 and 12 month follow-up reviews.
What did you find?
Yeah, so what we found was that tic severity was significantly reduced over the course of treatment. So we found almost a 19% reduction in Yale scores and a 22% reduction in the video assessment scores. And those reductions were actually maintained at 6 and 12 month follow-ups as well. So it was really exciting to see that the benefits from the treatment were lasting in this cohort. And so those findings suggested that this combined intervention had potential to be effective as a treatment for tics.
Yeah, what I found really exciting about that one strength of the study was that you showed this long-term effect up to 12 months, but also that the therapy that you were providing was just a short-term therapy. It didn't have to be an ongoing therapy for the whole 12 months, correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So just 8 weeks. Yeah.
So from an implementation perspective, that allows more patients probably to go through the system than otherwise would be possible with something that required ongoing practice, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's where the ACT techniques can be really helpful. Yeah, they really provide a lot of long-term use in their techniques.
So we talked about a couple of the strengths. This was a pilot trial. I think we should at least mention some of the limitations of the study. And of course, related to that, what are the next steps to determine if this is in fact an effective strategy for patients with tics going forward? Does your team have any other plans or thoughts on what you want to do next?
Yeah, definitely. So being a pilot trial, obviously the main limitation was the small sample size and also that we didn't have a comparator in the study. So we just had that one treatment arm. Our team always planned to use the findings from this study to conduct a larger study, so a randomized controlled trial. So we really want to compare our combined intervention with habit reversal therapy alone and see whether ACT has any potential in enhancing those effects of habit reversal therapy. We're also really interested in assessing relapse risk as well and the long-term benefits from treatment and gaining information on other clinical variables involved in relapse. Funding's obviously a big challenge in research, but yeah, we're very eager to find the resources we need to get it underway because we think it'd be a really valuable opportunity for patients here in Perth as well without much access to treatment.
Sounds great. So you mentioned access, which is a wonderful segue into my next question. And I'm sure that this varies extremely significantly based on where you are in the world. One of the first things that I thought of when reading your paper is this is all well and good, but I can't find a single person who will do habit reversal therapy for my adult patients. So I imagine that there would be significant barriers to implementation in a lot of places. I guess one of the advantages that we already talked about is that it's just a short course, 2 months, and then you're done, which is great for access. But do you have any thoughts about that particular aspect of this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I have thought a lot about that, actually. So obviously, we're very aware that training in any new treatment approach for therapists is very time-consuming. One advantage, however, is that ACT is already very widely used as a treatment approach by therapists. So many therapists would already have the toolkit for providing this type of treatment, at least the foundation for it anyway. So whereas habit reversal therapy, it's definitely more of a challenge to find therapists that are familiar with it, at least here in Australia. So we suspect either with habit reversal therapy on its own or combined with acceptance and commitment therapy, it just presents a similar challenge in implementation. So yeah, I guess that's the main barrier we've discussed in implementation of the treatment. I would really like to see more therapists get involved in this type of therapy with this cohort. So I'm hoping the fact that we're using ACT in this approach, that it creates a bit more of a buy-in for therapists who are already familiar with the treatment.
Absolutely. And I have to imagine that it's very gratifying for you as a psychologist, being able to take these patients who may have tried a lot of medications with lots of side effects that don't even work very well, and who may have a lot of social isolation or be experiencing other stigma from their tics. In fact, we did an episode on tics and stigma at the end of 2024. I have to imagine that as a psychologist, it's a really lovely population to work with, and you can see really tangible physical and emotional results for those patients.
Yeah, absolutely. Every patient I worked with, the amount of appreciation they had for the treatment was profound. It was really amazing to see. And like you said, seeing those results physically as well. and how they impacted their social life, their work life, school life as well. So yeah, it was really encouraging.
Great. Well, maybe some of our listeners will get inspired.
Yes, I hope so. I would love more people to just know about this area of work. It's really rewarding.
Thank you for your work and for trying to find the ideal combination for these patients. And thank you for joining us on this podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today. It's been a pleasure.
The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society or their affiliated journals, Movement Disorders and Movement Disorders Clinical Practice. Any disclosures of the participants can be found within the episode description located on the MDS website.